Hey guys, welcome to the Weekend Buzz. My name is Tony.
I'm Dale.
And welcome to this week's episode. Dale, how have you been, my man?
Not too bad.
Wicked. I've been absolutely smashing. Can you give us a rundown of what we're going to be going through this week, Dale?
Okay, so we're going to be starting off with our Rewind of the Week, which is basically where we watch a video movie that is linked to our main movie of the week. So we are watching the original Transformers from 2007. Then we'll be moving on to Tony's favourite section, which is Buzz News, where we take you through the five top news stories in and around the movie sphere right here, right now. Sometimes it does meld over into the TV sphere when the big news drops like today. And then we find some quirky, crazy, out-of-the-box kind of news stories that, you know, might be future news. Then we take you on to our main movie review of the week, which is Transformers The Last Knight. So 10 years on from the original, how much has changed? Then we wrap it up with our giveaway. So we announced the winner of last week's giveaway, which was for a signed Rivendell book signed by KJ Apa himself. And then we will do this week's giveaway for one lucky winner to win on next episode. So yeah.
Yeah, we are rocking and rolling this week, guys. So what are we doing first now?
We're going to be going straight on to our rewind.
So we'll go on to the rewind this week. So, this week's Rewind is director Michael Bay's Transformers, starring Shia LaBeouf and Megan Fox. Synopsis time, guys. An ancient struggle between two Cybertronian races, the heroic Autobots and the evil Decepticons, comes to Earth with a clue to the ultimate power held by a teenager.
Ooh. Mouthful.
It is a mouthful, but it's to the point. So yeah. You've got the Autobots and you've got the Decepticons. Can you remember watching the animated series as a kid?
I never got like stuck into it big time. I remember watching... I remember they've rebooted it a few years... but before the movie, I think it was like early 2000s, they rebooted it. And I kind of watched the here and now bits of episodes there and then. I never watched the original, I think it was like 80s version. I saw like a couple of episodes of it. But I never really got hooked on that as much, really.
I was hook, line and sinker. I was around that young age where, you know, that was being broadcast live on the sky from the satellite dish and all that. Like, absolutely brilliant. I loved it. Had all the little, you know, the toys and everything like that.
It's like a boy's dream though, isn't it? I mean, like, cars that transform. Yeah. That just looks so badass. It's, you know, it's kind of what you expect.
It is. And then, obviously, going on to this film, the 2007 Transformers, when they announced this, I remember seeing the trailer for it, and I thought, wow, this is going to blow my socks off. You know, this is kind of, you know, obviously Transformers brought into this century, which is going to be absolutely awesome to see where they're going to take it. Lo and behold, when we go into it, we have Shia and Megan Fox.
It's kind of like the introduction, mainly introduction more for Megan Fox to the big screen than it was for Shia. But like, I think it was a futuristic movement in the movie industry. It was that whole, we're bringing this to life. We're bringing it to, like you said, they're modernizing it. And I think they did a great job. I think the visuals of the Autobots, Decepticons, the whole Transformers kind of set up was amazing. And I thought Michael Bay did really, really well. It's kind of what he does. Like every Michael Bay movie, everyone complains about the explosions and stuff like that. To be fair, I quite like practical effects over animated effects
and stuff like that.
So when he does do the explosions, fair play to him on that one. And like I said, the visuals he got right. And what always hooked me was being a Linkin Park fan. And the second that Linkin Park song dropped, it was dropped in such... I remember actually going back, because there's a Goo Goo Dolls track in that as well.
Yeah.
And like the music just hooked me as along with the visuals. So, yeah.
Oh, Michael Bay. And he's also got the same kind of cinematography, ain't he? Like all of his films are along the same line.
Yeah.
Pastel-y, kind of in-depth Americana feel about his films.
Yeah, he doesn't change it. He keeps it short, simple, expensive budgets, but as many explosions as he can fit in.
Oh man, but the explosions were absolutely phenomenal. And I like the, you know, the Transformers themselves, the Autobots and the Decepticons, like, just the look of them. I mean, I know obviously they get the latest car and stuff like that.
It is the biggest product placement for any car manufacturer.
Yeah.
I'm not like me as a consumer watching this. I'm like, I want that Camaro. I want a Bumblebee.
Yeah.
I want a jet. I want this. I want that.
Yeah.
Like if Michael Bay comes up to you and goes, so what you got, Mercedes? They'll be like, here's our brand new car. Take it out for a spin. I'm pretty sure in the new one, the last night, they've got like is it not an F1?
They had a Bugatti, and then they had a new Mercedes.
Is it a McLaren? I think they've got a McLaren in it.
McLaren. Oh, there's so many.
That was in the fourth one, yeah. McLaren, there was a McLaren
but
in
to
it.
To be quite fair, like, just, and the way they transform and stuff, like, it's like the whole Doctor Strange thing. When you look at the screen,
yeah,
and you can see the inner workings of everything and the way it goes, just
the
great.
Sounds as well, just the sounds great, work really well. Every time they're like, the change in the transport, like, it kind of clicked with you.
Yeah.
And I think what the first one had, which the rest doesn't have, is, because it was new,
it was something different.
They've blatantly gone with that. They've gone, right, cool, let's not change it, let's rinse and repeat, and we're not going to be as taken back with the future ones because nothing changes.
Yeah.
Like, don't get us wrong, we don't want huge changes, but we want bits and bobs and little changes. The fact that it was kept near enough the same
is probably
why the rest falter. But the first one to me was the benchmark. It was the introduction. Like, it's one of them films where you go into, you don't have to take too serious, you go in and watch it for what it is. You go in there to see the spectacle of these cars transform. Like, I'll always remember when they're on the highway, but belting down the highway, and Optimus Prime transforms halfway. Like, it's just a car, and then it transforms halfway. The transition between the car to the robot in that scene, it's just so fluid. It's as if it's
and it gets you fixated to what's on the screen and what's happening in that moment in the story. I mean, the story for me was a standard Transformers story. If you've watched the old, like,
original
and everything, and the movie, and it's just box standard, you know.
I don't think you needed anything too complicated.
You didn't really, but to be quite fair, as the franchise went on, thinking about the franchise from this first one, it was the same as when you watched when we watched Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
Like, watching this one, you were like, "Well, they could take this places," and then all of a sudden you think, "Oh wow." Yeah.
To be fair, the difference with the Fast and Furious franchise is they kind of went, like, I quite like the second one. And then the third one I like in the sense that it was completely different. In the fact that it was all about drifting and it was a different kind of mechanic. Like, I didn't take it as along the story arc, but because it was different. Whereas with Transformers, it was kind of like same for episode one. So episode one, Transformers 1, then 2 was like same, but let's have a bit more goofy, weird comedy. And
it was,
but because they did that, it started to lose sense of the story. Then the third one, which, like, there was components of it which were really, really good.
It sucked you in.
And then there was bits that dripped through and you were just like, yeah, I can see the foundations breaking.
Yeah.
And then the fourth one happened, and then now the fifth one's happened. You're kind of like, as a consumer, we're like, right, we've had enough. We get it. We know what it is. But as the developers and as the company behind them, as long as it keeps making them money,
I think
they're
keeps making the money
it.
Back plus some. They're not.
Yeah, they're going
to
keep.
They're not
going
to say boo to any goose. To be fair, but to be fair to you know, I loved Shia's character. His parents were funny.
Sam Witwicky,
you know, and then Megan Fox when she was introduced. Obviously, the eye candy on the screen.
Yeah.
Around that time, everyone was all like, "Oh, have you
Megan,
seen
yeah." Fox? I think the good thing about this though is in the Transformers, Megan Fox, yes, she was portrayed as, at the start, you were like, oh, she's the eye candy.
Yeah.
But then she actually, as the film goes on, the good thing about it is she wasn't always the damsel in distress. Like,
no,
there were some moments where you hear about her troubled background, she's there fixing cars, she's actually getting, like, the boundary of sexism is kind of depleted.
It's gone.
And then there's that moment right at the end where she drives Bumblebee around on a like a hook car, and she's driving in or out. So it kind of bent the boundaries between, oh,
standard
Megan Fox is the eye candy, damsel in distress too.
Yeah.
She's a bit of the eye candy, lads, but she can kick ass too.
Yeah.
And this is why we've cast her.
And that's what she was. She was a strong female, and she held that role really well. Same as Shia with his role. I thought he held it pretty well. He wasn't boring in different places.
I think with the franchise, you got Shia was that character, and Megan was that character, and I think that's why third got lackluster and loose, because you lost Megan Fox. You've watched these two films of these characters coming together, you've bought into these characters, and then you lose one of them in the third, and then in the fourth you lose the other one. Now obviously that could be down to many different things we don't know of, but it does change the dynamic of the story and the way you watch
it completely does. And I mean, thinking about this, I think we've gone over most of this for this rewind. I mean, I'm happy to end it there and thinking about the film in general.
Yeah.
I was when I first watched it and watched it the second time, I did think this if they'd done more, it could have gone better places than what it has done. But for me, thinking about it, I'll let you score first this time, because I'm mixed emotions totally on this, but yeah, go for it.
I think as a there and then kind of film, it was really, really good. It was the start of its era. It was a revolutionary moment in the way the cinema was made, IMAX cameras, stuff like that. So, I mean, I'm more than happy to class it as a strong 7. It's not like the most mind-boggling film ever, but it is... You know, it's what you paid for and it's what you wanted to see.
And at the period it came out, it's like you said.
Yeah,
like
it was the perfect period.
It was the perfect film for that time period. And it was everything you wanted from a Transformers film.
Yeah.
When you thought about what was happening beforehand in the Transformers franchise. So yeah, I'm quite happy to score it a 7 as well with you, Dale. Guys. I mean,
bing, bang, bosh, a 7 for Transformers, isn't it?
It is, straight out the bag. We ain't even got to hang about here on the weekend, Buzz, because we're racing ahead here. To be quite fair to you, when you get such a standard film like Transformers...
You get what you expect.
You get what you expect. Yeah. And there is no point dwelling on the past and dwelling on everything else when quite clearly you're going to get what you're given.
Yeah.
Let's get on to my favourite section, Dale.
Oh, we've got some doozies for you this week as well, haven't we, guys? Some absolutely amazing doozies. So let's move on to this week's Buzz News.
Ooh. So, yeah, on to this week's Buzz News, guys. Like Dale said, he's got some big stories coming there. So, Dale, we're going to start with you. You can't tease us like that.
Okay.
We'll start off with a big story.
We'll start off with a big story, and then we'll kind of tilt into the bigger one. I want to kind of leave one to the end, because I think the one at the end will be a big talking point. Because me and Tony have already had a quick discussion about this before the filming. And I really want to get into it in depth towards the end. So we'll start off with this. Like I said, this is more of a TV kind of part, rather than... Oh, hello. Just seen a new bit of news. We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
So this is more TV news. Yeah. So Marvel's Inhumans has just received its very first trailer, which is very, very interesting.
It is very interesting.
Considering it was scheduled to be a movie... Then it was kind of derailed because of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the way the Inhumans were portrayed. And now there's this whole big hoo-ha as the Inhumans have been one of the first TV shows shot in IMAX, and it's going to be premiered on the IMAX screen.
I think that's absolutely awesome, because I'm loving at the moment the transition that we are seeing from film and TV, because they're emerging so much that I'm just loving... to see how that immersion's coming out. And with the added bonus now of, you know, IMAX being used in TV, you know, looking at the trailer looks stunning. It looks so crisp, it looks so clear. The characters look awesome.
I think you only got to really, really see, though, which was a little bit of an issue, depending on how you want to take it, but you only really got to see one kind of character... Yeah. Explode, like you got these little bit of Easter eggs. He's like, oh, look, this is what Black Bolt can do, this is what so and so can do, but you only really got to see one. And I'm really, really excited to see how he takes this, because I want him to be different than his character in Game of Thrones.
Oh, I do, but he still seems to come across as a bit of a naughty boy.
Well, I don't want to. So he plays Maximus, and it's Ewan Rihon. He was in So he was in Misfits, was the first one he'd done. And then he was in, obviously, Game of Thrones. And he kind of plays the same type of character in this. So Maximus is Black Bolt's brother. And he kind of tries to overthrow Black Bolt.
He does, yeah.
And push for the throne in the trailer.
And to be quite fair, looking at the trailer, I don't know. I like the look of it. And to be quite fair, it's the first kind of Marvel TV I've actually gone, oh... This could be really good. And to be quite fair, Dale, I wouldn't mind going to watch it
in an IMAX. I think it's one of the things that when it comes out on IMAX, you probably have to go and watch it because it'll be a one-off kind of experience.
Yeah.
I think the reason that it grabs us more than the rest, not including the Netflix stuff, because the Netflix, I think, you hold it at a different level.
Yeah.
The difference between this and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is you're actually going to see superheroes unleashed, like actually go at it. Now, I was really excited for the movie franchise to see Black Bolt because he's actually a very, very interesting character. Because how do you portray a character that can't speak?
And to be quite fair, looking at it, I mean, the bulldog, the big massive bulldog, like, that's awesome. I mean, I'm just, I don't know, I watched it today. It come out today when we're, you know, we're recording this. I've watched it and I'm kind of like, I want to see it. I'm happy with, you know, there was a lot of talk about it. There's a lot of talk on the news feeds we both looked through. There's a lot of, you know, kind of on-set images. So it was nice to see, you know, a running trailer for it. I'm looking forward to it, Dale. Really am.
Yeah. Like, really, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens when the trailer drops. And I would like to think that the trailer kind of... I'm hoping that the trailer kind of picks up. I hope it's not that whole series in one, because it would be nice to see Maximus overthrow in the first episode and just drop Inhumans into the deep end. Yeah, I would like it to be like that. Rather than spending like two episodes of us building this up with Maximus, getting to know the characters and that, and then going, bang, now I'm going to overthrow you. Yeah. I'd quite like it to be overthrow
and a fight back.
Yeah.
That'd be cool, man.
I think you're straight on to the point there and you're rushing it through.
We've still got the Defenders coming up.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, Netflix is on a different level. They're already four shows ahead.
They are.
So it's going to be very interesting to see where it comes from.
I can't wait, man. I'm really looking forward to it. Sticking with a bit of Marvel kind of news, I'm going to go with Gotham's Cameron Monaghan wants to play Carnage.
Yeah, now, I saw that.
I think that is interesting. And I think, to be quite fair, if he fits the, if he goes obviously for the audition and he fits it, then yeah,
I think it would be great to see that. He plays a really good Joker, though.
He does play a really good Joker, and I could see him playing a wicked Carnage, but the guy would have to be bulked and he'd have to go. But obviously, not a lot of what CG can't bloody do. Do you know what I mean these days? But I'd be really interested in seeing that, even if it was just like a special feature on a DVD.
Yeah.
The audition for that, but yeah. So, that's that news, guys, you know, of having...
Short, simple, to the point.
It is, because there's nothing really you can talk about this kind of spin-off that's happening with Tom Hardy, or the Venom spin-off, because it's what everyone's kind of like, wow. So as soon as they've said Tom Hardy, like, Cameron Monaghan's there, and you're like...
It's one of them bits of news that are always going to drop that's instantly, each word hooks you closer and closer.
It does.
And I mean, even if a trailer drops, I'm going to give it a go because it does look absolutely... The whole premise behind it, being a Spider-Man fan myself, the whole premise behind the characters would be incredible to see.
I think that's absolutely awesome. Dale, get us on with that third piece of news, please, man.
Okay, so this is a very, very interesting bit of news, and this picks up from last week's Baby Driver.
Go for it.
Ansel Elgort is playing JFK in Mayday 109.
Oh, I think that's a good call, and I can't wait to see him. I really can't wait to see him.
I can't wait to see him again.
I can't. I think he's a bright talent for the future. He's going to be in a lot of films, guys, and you're going to see a lot of him. I haven't looked at his IMDb, so I can't actually say what upcoming productions he's going to be in. I did see this news about JFK, and to be quite fair, the way he acted in Baby Driver, I could see him being
Kennedy. I could see him nailing it.
I can see him absolutely nailing it. I think that's absolutely
There's
awesome.
So many news stories this week. It's crazy.
There is so many news stories, but there's another one that's, you know, caught my eye. I mean, if we finished that about the young
I think we might even sneak in another one because we're moving through these ones quite quick.
We are pretty quick.
Let's see what you've got.
The one that I really liked, and I'm kind of a bit like, can I see this going in a good direction or a bad direction, is the Batman.
Oh, okay.
Right? So we're going to go on to the Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
So Ben Affleck. So the Batman features a detective version of the Dark Knight.
Good.
So we're going to see more detective work coming through. I don't know how to feel about that because obviously we haven't really been introduced to that.
No, you haven't seen the detective side of it because, I mean,
reading the comic books, I understand that. And I'm like, you know, bringing it to the film... Brilliant.
It'll be interesting to see.
How are they going to bring it in?
I think it'll be good because you look at the other ones, the building the story that they've had to do, you don't need it in this one. Like, we've had so many years of Batman, we haven't had a big gap between it. He's been introduced to us in Superman, and then we'll have Justice League as well. So I think it's actually going to be quite good to see a different kind of angle, the other angle of Batman, which, if done right, could be incredibly well done.
I think, Matt Reeves is obviously the director You know, they search high and low for a good director, because Ben Affleck was like, look, I am actually going to direct it as well as starring it. And I don't think that's going to be possible, because he's going
That's why he dropped. I think that's why he wanted, he'd rather focus on making a good Batman as himself than put his reputation on the line for
it. I mean, I don't know. I'm really looking forward to it. I can't wait to see what the Batman comes out like. I want to know what time. It's what we said before about this DC kind of timeline. It's jumpy, it's erratic. So it's going to be good to see where this picks up, whether it's before or after the death of Robin. Do you know what I mean? And everything like that.
I think it should be after, because I think everyone kind of knows this happened. Dead. So yeah. I don't think there's any point in going back.
No. But would you like to see, right, being a comic book fan yourself, would you like to see the death in flashbacks in The Batman?
I think flashbacks could kind of do it, yeah.
Yeah.
But
Not overly done in flashbacks, because there are some films where they try and get their point across in about 10 different flashbacks.
Yeah. I'd rather it not all be done. I wouldn't rather it be stuffed in at one, because it's quite a sensitive subject.
Yeah.
But I kind of want it to be built up in the right way. I don't think we need to go back and see it, but it would be nice to see, because it's such a big turning point. For those of you at home that don't know how it happens or why it happens, feel free to go and look it up. Just Google it up. It's called Death of the Family. It's an original comic back from, I think it's early 80s, early 90s, something like that. And it's quite an interest. It's how... Now, obviously, we kind of know... I don't want to give too many spoilers away, but we kind of know that it's the Joker that's had a hand in it, and it's kind of what puts Joker to the centrepiece of Batman's life.
And we've just recently had a Death of the Family, you know, revamp.
Yeah, I think it was like 2 years ago there was a revamp of it.
And that was awesome. I absolutely fell in love with that. Bought the graphic novel as well.
Yeah.
Let's see what that comes
we're
up
gonna,
with.
We're going to skip over, because we're going to add in an extra news story today. So this one I've just seen as well. A sequel to The Accountant is in the works.
Oh, I see that news. And to be quite fair, The Accountant to me was a massive surprise.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. It was well told. I love the action sequences in it. John Berthnall, he's kind of like him and Dominic Monaghan, man crushes all day long. Like, I love the pair of them. I think they're brilliant. I didn't see enough of him in Baby Driver, John. But to be quite fair, it was short, sweet and subtle, and it worked. And that's what made Baby Driver, I think, for me. But yeah, I can see that. And I can't wait for The Punisher. That's still to come as well. That's another one.
Yeah, okay. Short, sweet and simple on that one, like I said.
That's what I'm saying. It's like,
I fully enjoyed the first one. I don't want them to be flogging it again.
No, I don't want it to be. I don't want it to be a direct follow-on. I don't want it to be... I don't know where I'd want to see the
where you
timeline.
Want it to go, yeah, yeah.
But thinking about it and knowing it and thinking about the film...
You're happy that it's going ahead, but you're also... unhappy that it's going ahead.
Apprehensive, because I don't want them to ruin what they already had.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Let's go on to this last bit of news then.
Oh, you've got another one.
The first Jumanji trailer dropped. So this is our last bit of news story, and you've got two different sides of the story here. So the first trailer for the Jumanji dropped. If you haven't seen that, go and check it out. Tony, thoughts?
I'm kind of interested, and I'm kind of intrigued. I'm not going out there and going, oh my God, new Jumanji film, I need this in my life. I've kind of watched the trailer, digested it, and thought to myself, right, as long as you don't step on massive toes and poor Robin, don't tarnish his role.
Oh, they've already done that for me.
To be quite fair to you, the only way they'd do that is if there was no kind of little Easter eggs, and also there was no kind of nod to that. But what I've been reading is the fact that this time period that they're doing it in, it's basically the computer game. So you get the drift, they go as their avatars in the game, and it's The Rock and Kevin Hart, blah, blah, blah.
So hang on, basically four kids at high school get put in detention, they find an old games console, it's called Jumanji, they play it, they all choose their avatars, and then they get sucked into this game, and like Tony just said, they all become these actors. There's Jack Black, there's Kevin Hart, and then there's The Rock, and then...
And the they female
all,
lead.
Yeah,
well.
And they all become these characters. Now, I hate the idea, I think it's... They've basically gone, oh, Rock's done Journey to the Center of the Earth, number two, let's do the exact same kind of thing. Yeah. Let's put the name Jumanji on it, because then people will want to come watch it. To me personally, I think this trailer has, like, I don't, it's one of the first trailers that I've seen and gone, I don't want to watch this, because it's, they've associated it wrong. They've done what they shouldn't do, which is put a name on it just to get you to go and watch it. And I think the trailer has put me off completely. But Tony's kind of the opposite. He's
intrigued by it. I'm just like, I mean, like I said, like the whole, I've heard the nod to Robin will be in the film, and I've heard the time frame is when he's in the jungle, is when he's in the jungle as well. So,
but then that makes no sense, considering he was in the jungle back in the early 80s.
This is what I'm reading online, and to be quite fair, it's buzz news. It's wacky, it's crazy. And to be quite fair to you, watching it, all right, the comedic relief's going to be there. Jack Black, Kevin Hart, you know, The Rock just doing it. I mean,
the
thing that did get me, Dale, and I really do, is the fact that when his avatar, The Rock, hit the earth, and he kind of looked up, Pete was eyebrow. That killed it. That slightly killed it for me. And then I thought to myself, but then, do you know what went after my thoughts? I went onto Twitter, and he was tweeting people. So someone put up, Welcome to the Jungle, the film he'd done.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they put the post, and they're like, wow.
Kind of, what's happening?
And he kind of bit back.
Yeah.
And he was like, dude, just wait until the film come out, and stuff like this. You can see all this all on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then I thought to myself, he's going to be doing Shazam.
Yeah. And he's going to be Black Adam.
And all this lot. And I'm so, like,
like, don't get it wrong, like, my biggest issue with it is they've kind of played to the stereotypes.
Yeah.
Like you said, like, the Jack Black and Kevin Hart are going to be the comic relief. Rock is going to be there just to punch people's faces off.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't think, like, don't get me wrong, if they made this, like, the concept's great, being sucked into a video game, playing as your avatars.
Oh, yeah,
but if they didn't call it Jumanji, if they called it, like, I don't know, like, Jungle Story, something like that, something that wasn't linked to Jumanji, I'd probably go watch it for a bit of fun. I'd be like, it's something different. But the fact that they're trying to say, this is the cult classic that you've watched before.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, to me, it's gone.
I don't think they were going to go for that, though. Reading what I've read, I don't think they were ever going to carbon copy or even remotely go with it.
No, and I don't think they should do.
I think it's I know for a fact this is going to be a standalone film. It'll have nods to, obviously, Jumanji. This is what the studio that made Jumanji is going to want to take it in.
They're going to want to make it a franchise.
We want a franchise out of it. Because people know it and love it as a cult classic.
So make it something different. Don't, if you start off with Jumanji and all the older lot like myself go and watch it and go, this has got nothing to do with Jumanji, this is terrible, you're going to crash the franchise. Call it something different. You've already got Kevin Hart drawing in an audience, you've got Jack Black drawing in an audience, and then you've got The Rock drawing in an audience. You're going to get enough there as it is. Just don't call, my biggest issue is calling it Jumanji. The concept's fine. Don't call it Jumanji. Don't try and act as if it is the original.
I'm going to now call it Sega Saturn's Jungle Run.
Sega Saturn. Jungle Run, that's it. They could have called it bloody Jungle Run. It would have been absolutely fine.
It would have been, yeah. Well, that's what we're going to call it. So here on the Weekend Buzz, guys,
it's no longer Jumanji.
About it, it's called Jungle Run. I like that. Well, guys, that has been this week's Buzz News. There was extra news which I was going to talk about, but we're going to be running.
Oh, drop it. If it's that important, drop it.
It's not really important. It's just talking about Deadpool, because there's been so
I've seen this.
Much stuff. So Josh Brolin, he's now having his face cast. They're now filming. He's been at the X-Men's house, Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, I saw that picture.
And now there's been pictures of him in 80s t-shirts crashing a kid's party.
Yeah.
They've cast another guy, which has been on his back.
Wilder People's Julian Dennison.
And loads of people have been, like, confused and, like, do I love it? Do I hate it? And
I love it regardless.
It's gonna be so good. And I am ecstatic that they've started to film, and I'm getting goosebumps, because if they do as good as the first, I will be dead happy. And Josh Brolin at the moment, pulling it out of the bag. Let's just see how he does as Thanos. Let's see how he does as, you know. So he's obviously filmed his scenes as Thanos. I'm saying that now. You know what I mean? Because if he's got his face in cast for Cable, then, you know, writing's on the wall.
Never know.
But right, we'll see.
Let's wrap it up. So that was the end of this week's Buzz News. Join us next week for even more wacky and crazy bits and buzz.
Yeah. Join us next week, guys. So this week's main review is director Michael Bay's Transformers The Last Night, starring Mark Wahlberg, Anthony Hopkins and Josh Duhamel. Autobots and Decepticons are at war with humans on both sides. Optimus Prime is now gone, The key to saving our future lies buried in the secrets of the past, in the history of the Transformers being on Earth. Dale, there's a trailer in there somewhere.
It started as a legend. One of the greatest of all. A thousand years we've kept it hidden. To protect Earth from what was destined to arrive.
Optimus Prime, you destroyed your home. Do you seek redemption?
My maker, I do.
So yeah, let's get straight into it. So we're introduced again to Mark Wahlberg's character. And to be quite fair to you, nothing's really happened since the last film. It's quite the same as every other Transformers film, to be honest with you. We've got the Autobots and the Decepticons fighting each other still. They're trying to find this piece of history, which Merlin, the old wizard, you know, back at the King Arthur's time, has got. And it's basically a race to find this piece of kind of, you know, treasure, magic treasure, to then save the world. To be quite honest with you, the only thing really that really done me in this film was kind of the beginning when they were kind of outlining everything, and it was the kind of King Arthur massive war.
Yeah.
I did enjoy that, and then I did think to myself, I could be just really watching Guy Ritchie's King Arthur. The only thing I ain't got is a Snatch or Lock Stock
kind of moment.
Moment in it. But to be quite fair to you, that was kind of a really good moment, and the film did build me up from there, and then let me down horrifically when it was basically the same stuff. The only thing being, we're now visiting, you know, trashed cities, which, you know, after having the Decepticon Autobots war, you're guaranteed to have that. So it was kind of, to me, going through kind of a Terminator phase,
yeah.
Which I didn't really want, because I don't know. It's like I said about the first Transformers. Looking at it, there could have been so many possibilities, and you could have taken the franchise in a totally different direction and a better direction.
But they haven't.
And they haven't. All they've done with this film is they've just gone bit. From all of the other films, mashed them together and then just gone,
I'll tell you
what's hot at the moment. Everyone's looking forward to Guy Ritchie's, you know.
Everyone's back to the old Stone
Everyone
Ages.
Loves Game of Thrones. Let's go back and let's go, you know.
King Arthur, Excalibur, you know, stuff
and
like that.
And to be quite fair, that was the only kind of draw that I really liked because, you know, Game of Thrones, I'm really looking forward to Game of Thrones. I did kind of like, you know, Guy Ritchie's King Arthur, but
I just found a bit of news here that will probably put you off. It turns out there's actually an end credit scene.
I didn't stay to the end credits. I did see a scene, basically, where there was some woman and she turned and her face shimmered. Is that the one you're on about?
There's a part where there's people in the desert looking at this unicorn horn. And Quintessa. So Quintessa is the main bad guy in this film.
Yes, she is.
She's kind of like the Planet Autobots. Or Planet
Cybertron.
She wants to bring Cybertron to Earth to destroy Earth so that...
Yeah.
And kind of go from there. That she gets foiled in her plan and apparently she comes crashing to Earth as a human form rather than as a, Transformer. She brainwashes Optimus Prime to go back and get her star for her. And what really guts me is there's all these little clues, all these little drip drops of that you kind of already get. So like the whole part of the lead of Mark Wahlberg's character being one of the last standing knights, and he's given a talisman so Cade Jaeger gets given a talisman which turns out to be Excalibur.
I mean, I like to be quite fair. I like that bit because you could see him getting frustrated. You know, the character was getting frustrated, and then I could see, you know, him being there, and I thought, there's got to be more to this somewhere. And then all of a sudden, he's just brandished the sword out from this kind of, you know, like you said, this...
Talisman,
and just held, you know, but an Autobot.
There was that he's now the saviour. And then there was this part about Vivian's character being... Laura's character being Vivian, who is now the part of the Wiccans, who is the only one that can hold the staff... of Quintessa.
Who's actually related to Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, so obviously I know they can't get Sheila, but if you did get Shia LaBeouf's character, it probably would have made it feel a little bit closer to home and made it feel a bit more connectable.
I mean, they had Josh Duhamel in there.
He was the soldier
from the first couple of films. And to be quite fair to you, I liked his character, but his character didn't have that much involvement.
It didn't change
either. It was flat, it was the same.
That's what I mean. Like, they've tried to develop it, but all they've done by trying to develop the franchise is go, here's a new Transformer to cause you more troubles, and you're just like, we've been there, done that.
It wasn't
like,
even a new Transformer. I mean, I watched
it. Well, like Quintessa and like the planet coming down. Like, what I disliked about the fourth one was they introduced us to like the Animalbots,
yeah,
like Grimlock and stuff like that. Dinobots, Grimlock and that. Yeah. You didn't get to see him do a lot. Like, all you got to see was Optimus ride him into battle. Like, and I know in this one in the trailer he coughs up a like a police car. Yeah. I would have liked to have seen Grimlock change into like his full on Dinobot power and have a good old fight. But
exactly,
it was more about Bumblebee fighting Optimus then, and it was just like,
to be quite fair, that was an epic fight. I liked and enjoyed that, and it was good to kind of hear. But the thing that was weird is that they were trying to fix Bumblebee's voice box.
Yeah, and then the voice box.
And then the voice came through anyway.
Yeah, Bumblebee's voice is the one that breaks Optimus out of his trance, which is what I mean. Like, there's all these little bits that didn't seem quite polished that they've just gone, right, okay, so we've got this talisman. It turns out to be Excalibur. Why can Mark Wahlberg's character wield it? All right, let's make him one of the last knights, one of the last protectors, like a descendant of King Arthur. Okay, cool, that works with like very little build-up. Vivian's character, all right, cool. Let's make her related to Sheila LaBeouf's character. She's one of the Witwickans. She can actually hold the Staff of Power that stops Quintessa. Cool. Shall we explain that? No. And then they've gone, how do we break Optimus out of his trance? I don't know. Let's get Bumblebee to speak for the first time in like five films. They just weren't polished little things.
There was good comedic moments in it. You know, Bumblebee obviously being that comedic moment, and obviously they had that new bot in there, which was the Vespa, the blue Vespa. But to be quite fair, you know, that was kind of bigged up to be kind of the BB-8 of Transformers, and there was hardly anything of him in it. So you can't say something that's going to be something, and then you're not going to get, not going to be there.
Like, don't get me wrong, like, I'm not slating the film completely. Like, it's just one of them films where it's part of the franchise. When I go into it, I know what I'm expecting.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm sitting down to watch it for what I expect, but when these little bits come in that are just like sharp, unpolished edges, it's kind of like, guys, you've got a £215 million budget,
yeah,
and you're telling me you couldn't sharpen the, you couldn't polish these edges. Disappoints me and lets me down a little bit.
Apparently, Michael Bay's done with the franchise, so whoever picks up the reins to do Transformers, because there's going to be another one. You can't leave it like that and not do another one. So we're going to get, what is it, six now?
It'll be the sixth.
And to be quite fair, I don't think we need blinking six Transformers film. Like, it's the same as the Resident Evil films. They're rebooting that.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's so much more you can do with that. And there's so much more you can do with Transformers. That's
what I mean. The issue, the idea behind Resident Evil though being rebooted is, you can go down a different characters avenue. Yeah. There's multiple characters avenues. Whereas Transformers, you've got to kind of revolve it around one kind of area.
Yeah.
But you're not, like I said, you're not polishing it right. You're literally just getting someone to go, here's a story, let's do this alien invasion, let's do this person's doing this to this, do this. And they've just gone, cool, we'll accept it, we'll pay you $1 million for that. Michael Bay, here's 214 million, go do as many explosions as you want.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fine, but you've got to get it right. You can't keep putting these weak stories in front of us. Like you said, the CGI is fine, absolutely
CGI
fine.
CGI is fine.
The transforming of the abilities is still really good. The sound's still really good. Like, the whole battle
scene.
Physical
effects are still really good.
The battle effects are all still really, really good.
It's lacking in character building. It's lacking in story. It's lacking in just, you know, it's the same Michael Bay cinematography, Americana. Bosh,
we get that.
Bang,
we accept that when we go in and watch it.
We just
want it polished a bit more.
I want it polished, and to be quite fair, the next film, they've got a, I mean, obviously, we know what's going to happen in the next film because they're not finished. You know, with Quintessa, so we know what's going to happen and we know what's coming. The thing I didn't like as well was we didn't see enough of Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
You know, Prime's supposed to be this
the leader, the Mac Daddy.
I'm there, bosh. We had Bumblebee trying to do it. We're getting a Bumblebee spin-off, which is now supposed to be set in the 80s. Where are we going to go with that? What are you going to do with that? I don't get what the studio thinks. They just
They've got the money behind it. The kids will love it because of the cars.
Yeah.
The car companies will go, cool, the dads are going to take to it, so you can borrow our Camaro for free, or you can borrow this for free, you can do this for free. Michael Bay's happy shooting on IMAX and 3D cameras.
Exactly.
So the camera companies are like, here you go, you can have this on discount if you pump us more. So they're getting all the stuff for like real cheap anyway.
Yeah.
And it's the budget behind wages and stuff like that that's pushing up. They're going to have toy sales. They've just got so much franchise building behind it. I get it, but polish it up a little bit for us.
Come on, give us a good sick film. That's what I want out of this. You know, we've led up to this point. We've had a good first. I don't know.
The middle was shaky,
and this was kind of okay, but just like Dale said,
learn from the mistakes. Exactly. Build on what was good, which you're getting what you had good in the first one, right? You're exactly. just not polishing the rest. So Tony, let's wrap it up. I went first on the rewind. So what you got for this one?
I'm gonna go, because I've seen this all before, I'm gonna go with a 5.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to meet you bang in the middle at a 5. It's not terrible. It's not the worst film in the world. But it can be so much more better. It's got so much more potential.
It's got everything still that you like in a Transformers film. It's got everything from the cars, from the transformations, to everything in there that you want to just sit down, bums in seat, popcorn, have a good time, enjoy yourself. So guys, here on the Weekend Buzz, it's a 5 out of 10 for Transformers The Last Night.
Cool. Now let's move on to this week's giveaway. So we'll quickly go through last week's winner. So last week's question was very, very simple, actually. You had a 1 in 3 chance of getting this right.
Oh, yeah.
And all we wanted to know was the title of one of the Cornetto trilogy from Edgar Wright, Nick Frost, and Simon Pegg. Now, the answers you could have given us could have been easily Shaun of the Dead.
I know one.
Hot Fuzz.
A New Hope.
And the one that would have got you kicked out and friend-requested was The World's End. But to be fair, the one that did put The World's End, he said it's because, which I agree with him, because it was all shot in local areas like Welwyn Garden City and Letchworth, which is
where
absolutely fine. Where we are. So the winner of this week's, or last week's competition, is Alison Mason with Hot Fuzz. Whenever I need a laugh, I stick it on. Always a fave.
Don't we all?
Don't we all? And you had a bit of news from Edgar Wright today, didn't you?
Well, yeah, apparently, like, reading, because he's been plugging Baby Driver. Ed, right.
Don't worry about plugging it, Baby Driver, mate.
Don't plug it, brother.
Don't worry.
You got it. It's there, all right? Everyone's going to go and watch it and love it. We do. Everyone does. Let's go. Let's move on. But the news we really liked, and I liked, that I found out, is that some of the interviews you've been giving, you've been saying, oh, I've got a good idea for Hot Fuzz 2.
That's what you want to hear, mate.
So, you know, we'll never do a Shaun of the Dead. But yeah, I've got an idea for thingy. You know, Shaun of the Dead, I'd love to see like a next one on that, to be quite fair, because I reckon that could be taken into different aspects and different avenues.
Anyway, congratulations to Alison Mason. You won that signed Rivendell book signed by KJ Apa himself.
And they're filming that currently, the season 2. So,
season 2. And if you haven't seen the interview with KJ Apa, check that out on the website, in the YouTube channel, because London. He did drop a couple of doozies, didn't he?
Oh, he dropped some massive ones. I mean, I literally just did, I told you, didn't I? I just finished watching the series with the wife. We met him, shook his hand, had a laugh, then watched the interview and just went, right, well, we don't need to watch season 2 now. See you later.
Like, still watch season 2, but...
but still watch it, guys, because it's going to be absolutely brilliant. I've seen some pictures. You're in for a ride. Dale, we're going to get on to this week's now, aren't we?
This week's giveaway. So, for those of you that have been watching us regularly, we have been giving away each single issue from The Button, which is a crossover issue between Batman and The Flash, which also involves Watchmen. Which is very, very interesting. So we've given away parts 1 to 3. We are now going to give away part number 4, which Tony is going to hold up for us now. So this is Flash issue 22, I believe. It will be the standard cover, not the 3D cover, unfortunately. But this does get you the final part, the final piece of the puzzle of the crossover story arc. And if you do want to get the rest of the story arcs, go visit our friends at Limited Edition Comics if you're local, or check out their eBay account, which we will put in the link in the description below. Yeah. You get 5 comics, check you get 20% off. 5 comics with 20% off. Equals cheaper than chips. Just saying.
Oh, it does, guys. All you've got to do is answer a very, very simple question to win this issue of the Flash Watchmen crossover. So, Dale, what is the question this week, my man?
The question, very, very simple. And it's because we're a Michael Bay's fan.
Go on.
Which film did Michael Bay direct with Will Smith and Martin Lawrence? Now, we can have the first one or the second one. Well, if you don't get this right, you know, check it out. We know it's rated 18 and 15.
But
you know, bad boys,
IMDb.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do when we come for you? If you don't get that right.
That's terrible.
It was really, really bad. Don't worry, I will give you a clip or a little bit of a teaser.
So, bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Question again is, which film did Michael Bay direct with Will Smith and Martin Lawrence?
And you win this, guys, which is the Flash issue
22.
So, guys, get your answers in the comments down below. Remember to like, subscribe, because then you'll get everything. And all the prizes we give you and everything.
You'll win it all.
God. Right, so, Dale, also, I haven't forgotten, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Top three movies.
Oh, top three movies.
Is that what you're talking about?
No.
What were you talking
about? Rewind next week.
Oh, next week's Rewind. Okay. So next week's Rewind, which I am looking forward to, because the main movie, the review of the week, I'm so looking forward to seeing him portray my favourite superhero. So our Rewind of next week will be the original, the first, the Tobey Maguire, the Green Goblin, the introductory to the big screen.
Goosebumps.
Batman. It's the 2002 Spider-Man starring Tobey Maguire, William Dafoe, and Kirsten Dunst.
Can't wait to
rewind
that.
And that is because our main movie review of the week is Spider-Man Homecoming. Starring Tom Holland, who has an amazing career ahead of him. I wish him all the best.
Oh, man.
Since seeing him in Impossible, where, oh my God, his performance, such a strong film. And then not only do we get to see him on the screen, we get to see Tony Stark himself, Robert Downey Jr., alongside the original movie Batman. That is Michael Keaton, who is playing the Vulture. And my gosh,
you know what?
From the trailer, does he look like a badass?
I know, I can't wait for it. And we've got the Shocker in it as well. And we've got Miles Morales in it.
I haven't heard about that yet.
Oh, that's good news.
I try not to dive too much into it, because I don't want to wreck it.
So yeah, guys, there's a lot of characters going to be starting
off. A lot of drip drops in there.
MCU.
Venom, symbiote, just saying.
Tom Hardy's got that, son.
Tom Hardy's going to rock in right at the end.
Do you know what? That could happen, because we've already said they can cross over.
Yep.
Sony and Marvel have said they can cross over. So
cross the streams.
Happen. I would love to see, end credit scene, Tom Hardy standing there, symbiote somewhere, bosh. I'm done, I'm off. I'll be happy for the
bingity,
rest.
Bingity, bongity, bang.
That's it, done. So, yeah, guys, next week's review is going to be Spider-Man Homecoming. Remember, guys, our Rewind's going to be the original Spider-Man.
So join us along with that.
Join us for that. If you want to watch any of the interviews from any of the Comic-Cons we go to, you can catch them on this channel as well. My name's been Tony.
I've been Dale.
And thank you very much for watching. Stay fresh. We'll see you next week, guys.